Matthew 27, verse 15, and it says, "Now at that feast the governor was wont to release unto the people a prisoner whom they would. And they had then a notable prisoner called Barabbas. Therefore, when they were gathered together, Pilate said unto them, Whom will ye that I release unto you, Barabbas or Jesus, which is called Christ? For he knew that for envy they had delivered him. When he was set down on the judgment seat, his wife sent unto him, saying, Have thou nothing to do with that just man? For I have suffered many things this day in a dream because of him. But the chief priests and elders persuaded the multitude that they should ask Barabbas to destroy Jesus. The governor answered and said unto them, Whether of the twain will ye that I release unto you? They said, Barabbas. Pilate saith unto them, What shall I do then with Jesus, which is called Christ? They all say unto him, Let him be crucified. And the governor said, Why? What evil hath he done? But they cried out the more, saying, Let him be crucified. Tonight I would like to preach on the phenomenon that we call social justice. And what must be understood first and foremost is that social justice is not biblical justice. And it is a very touchy thing to approach. And I find that many that are against social justice are not against it for the right reasons. We can't look at the idea of a social justice based on whether or not we agree with what they are saying or we do not agree with what they are saying. What I'm intending to do here is by looking at one of the first recorded instances of social justice, I want to remove it from today's conversation and put it back into a more biblical mindset. Why? Because right now it is embroiled by things of racism, classism, and things that are very hot-button topics for this world. But what if I took this social construct of social justice and removed what we're fighting about it today and put it into something else? Whether or not we should crucify an innocent man. Now, before I get too far into this, I want to make some things clear. I believe that all people, red, yellow, black, white, purple, if you got them, should be treated equally. I believe very firmly that as the Lord has shown me love, I am to show love to everyone else. That is my belief. It is not to say one thing or the other versus racism or classism. It is instead to look at the function of social justice, and hopefully we can gain a little bit more knowledge about it. We look at this and we say, well, this is right because of what they're saying. This is wrong because of what they're saying. This is wrong because who's saying it? It is not the point of social justice as to whether or not I agree with them. The fact of the matter is, man in and of himself is not set to decide right or wrong. What social justice is, by definition, is problematic. At its heart, it says that the morality and beliefs of the society as a whole grants you permission to execute judgment on those that do not comply to said doctrine. It implies that society is not only capable, but trustworthy enough to decide right and wrong. It also implies that the same society has the right to execute judgment to the satisfaction of the accusers. There are some errors in this line of thinking. Number one, we do not agree on what is right and wrong as a society. This creates multiple factions within the society, each seeking their own version of justice. When five people viciously beat another person, it is law for us, it is the law that we prosecute these people. We find the five. We discern what it is that they have done. To what extent did they perform the crime? We put them on trial for those crimes. We convict them if they are guilty. And then we put them in jail or execute whatever sentence that the law deems fit for that. Instead, social justice takes a step back and says, well, what color are the people that were beaten? And what color are the people doing the beating? In this particular case, it was something that happened quite a few months ago where five individuals ganged up on a postal delivery person and beat them senseless. 5-1, beating the lady senseless. And it did not make a large amount of noise. Why? Because of the color tones of the people's skin. It does not fit the social narrative, therefore we cannot talk about it. Right is right, wrong is wrong. And we should not depend on our political, ideological, or racial understanding to decide if it is right or wrong to physically assault somebody because you do not like how fast they are delivering your mail. Right and wrong exists outside of public opinion. It is not ours to decide right or wrong. We don't have it in us to decide right or wrong. Violence is always wrong in this connotation. Now, I do believe that I'm told to protect my family. So if violence were to find itself inside my house, it will be met with violence, right? God commanded that I protect my family. That's what's going to happen. But I do not get to decide right or wrong based on how everyone around me feels about it. It is based on what is right or wrong dictated to me by God. The second error that we see in this is that society decides the morality and responsibility of a situation with less than half of the story. We are left to fill in the blanks based off of our own assumptions, which are often formed around a narrative we have already accepted. And they use those hot button items in media. It is never that a person has been mugged. It is always the color of the person that's been mugged. There was a doctor who had an amazing breakthrough, just a fantastic breakthrough. And I tell you what, they never put her name in the headlines. You know what they said? Black doctor. Could you imagine going through all of the research, going through all of the study, paying the many tens of thousands of dollars to achieve that level of intelligence, that level of knowledge, just to be referred to as the black doctor? Why? Because social justice deems you have value if you fit into one of our hot topic buttons. Instead, we ought to have just said her name, such and such, Dr. So-and-so achieved this. But no, we don't talk like that. Why? It does not fit. She has value because right now we are sympathetic to this. Instead of she has value because she committed a wonderful thing to our society. Right or wrong does not fit a social narrative. And half the time we only know parts of the story and we try to decide the rest of the story based on a decision we've already made. Well, what color are they? Where are they from? What city? What part of town did they come from before we decide what really happened in the city? No, what happens in the story is most likely difficult to ascertain. Can I ask you a question? Raise your hand if you trust reporters. Now, unless y'all being conservative, and you don't want to raise your hand, I'm going to be led to believe that none of us trust reporters. But how many times have you formed an opinion based off of something you read? You know why we don't trust reporters? We don't trust reporters because they tell us news that sell. Used to be that, you know, whatever would be a page turner, whatever would be a headline maker. Now we call it clickbait. Whatever will get you to click on the news information to get me to read it. Right? That's how they make money. They're selling you the story, and you won't buy a lame story. So I've got to use hot button words, and I got to use contentious things to get your attention so you click on it, which means I've only got to tell you part of the story. I've got to embellish a little bit of the story, just enough to where I don't get fired, but enough to where you buy the paper. You understand the idea there? It's easy for us to miss half the story. And as a matter of fact, because we can send information so quickly, they've got to answer fast if they want to get the scoop. It used to be back when you first were paying attention to the news, if something happened at 7 o'clock, you just got to the point to where you could hear about it the next morning on the newspaper. And that was the height of technology. Now, if something were to happen on the other side of the world, we could find out about it within a half hour, which I think is negligible because it does not give us the proper time to properly see the situation. So we can't make decisions, or we can't trust opinions based on half the story. And as a matter of fact, we could have six people in the room when a story happened and still get three or four versions of the story from the people that were there. We have to not pass judgment on what we don't know. The very third problem with social justice that counteracts what it is the idea of mob mentality. When you get a bunch of sinners together and you excite them, what happens? Sinful things. When I take a bunch of people and I sell them on lies and I sell them on hatred and I sell them on the idea that if somebody irritates you, you can hurt them, we burn down cities. We hang people in the streets. We cut off entire swaths of a city and we take it over illegally. We burn things to the ground. That's mob mentality. So to sit there and say we can decide what's right, we can't. We can't even agree on what's right. To be able to sit there and say that we can have the right of a situation when we don't even have the full story, and then to be able to say that I can carry out judgment when we are sinners at best, dictates to us that social justice is a defunct process. Let's take, for instance, the account of something that just happened. Alec Baldwin. You guys hear about Alec Baldwin? Now, could you imagine? So if you don't know, here's what happened. Alec Baldwin was on the set of a movie, and a prop gun was accidentally loaded with real bullets. And Alec Baldwin, for the sake of the movie or however was happening in there, fired the gun and it killed one of the cast members. Not, I don't think it was all the actors, but it was part of the directing staff. Killed her. Now, all we know is that. But as I was reading that the other day, I could almost kind of hear the knives coming out of their sheaths and the axes being ground out to a point. And here's what I understand. You got the poor anti-gun people who are looking at that going, aha, see, ooh, Alec Baldwin's one of us. Am I right? Alec Baldwin, staunch anti-Second Amendment person, against guns, against people being able to own them on a private basis, has on many occasions spoke out against gun ownership. Even at one particular time, as they drug up, said, could you imagine how horrible it would be in disdain to a police officer accidentally shooting somebody? Could you imagine how bad it would be to accidentally shoot somebody? So they can't attack him. Why? Because he's one of us. And therefore we lose all of the value that could be learned from this. And then you've got the Second Amendment people who are against social justice, right? Calling for his blood, his removal, him to pay, him to be thrown into jail, and they don't know half the story. What we have is we've got two people using a broken system and none of them being able to use it well now. Because if I sit there and I attack him for reckless gun ownership, I attack gun ownership. And if I attack him for accidentally shooting somebody, I attack one of our greatest spokesmen. And social justice gets gummed up because we can't rake him through the coals. Because if I do, I prove myself hypocritical. You understand what's wrong here? Now, the smart person would sit there and say, all right, what we need to do is we need to get down to the heart of why someone would be so daft as to put a bullet in a prop gun. And I could probably, if I had to imagine, I could probably already imagine. We're out in the desert. We're shooting guns. We didn't clear the gun right. I'm a gun owner. I've got rules. If you're a gun owner, you should have rules as to how it is handled, how it is operated. And if I'm running a production company, I don't use the prop gun to go shooting out in the desert with. But again, that's an assumption on my part. Whatever happened there, we need to find out. We need the whole story. If somebody broke the law, we need to get to that. We need to handle justice properly as defined by law. And not in a court of public opinion. Again, an opinion formed with half the story, low morality, and a thirst for blood. That is not how God designed us to be. Let's look back at our passage of Scripture. It's not just a fun ornament there. What happened? The Israelites had a set of laws for how to prosecute blasphemy. They broke them in this court session. The Romans had a way of behavior, a pattern of things that they did. They broke them. What did they do? They allowed society to decide right and wrong. And as the governor stood up and he said, "Listen, this man is an innocent man." They looked at him and said, "We don't care. Give us the criminal." That is what happens when we allow the shifting opinion of society to decide what we're going to do legally. It is a broken system. That not only is it, well, it's a double-edged sword. No, it's not. It's a time bomb. And in the last year, we watched it explode, and we watched the casualties. And they sit there and say, "Well, we need social justice because the system is broken." All right, well, the social justice is designed to fix a broken system. Now, we have laws, right? Yes. And had this argument recently. Well, those laws are skewed in the favor of the rich white man. Okay, which ones? Let's get a list. If they really are problematic, let's approach them as Christians and let's handle them. But you look through and they don't have any answers for that. I Googled it. I tried. Couldn't find any answers for what's systematically there. Now, there are a few rules and a few things there that could be twisted and turned a certain way. But as we look through, it's not the laws. What about the court system? Well, the court system convicts more of this kind of a color than that kind of a color. So what we need to do is we need to find more criminals who are this color to make it a good, solid indication. No, what should always happen is if you break the law, you have an equal treatment by the law. That's fixing it. So wait a minute. It's not the law. It's not the system. It's the people in it. You mean to tell me we got sinners in the government? All of them are sinners in the government. And we address that. And as we find that somebody is doing law wrong, when somebody is carrying things out from a skewed point of view, one way or the other, we address that guy. We pull them aside. We pull them out. We do what we have to do to make corrections. What we do not do is look at a society and say, "Listen, because we don't like a system, because we do not like the laws, it is perfectly okay for me to burn a building down." You know how many black-owned businesses were destroyed? And I'll go ahead and say, in the mob riots that took place. Is that the system correcting itself? No. As one person tried to tell me, "Well, Matt, this is trauma expressing itself." No, it is a temper tantrum. Trauma expresses itself in different ways. Anybody who has ever studied psychology will tell you that as a certain adult, you cannot lose sight or focus. We can't sit there and say, "Well, yes, you hurt people, and yes, you set fire to things, and yes, there was the potential for things to go really bad, but you're angry, so it's okay." Wouldn't that be a peach? I'm angry, it's okay. And by the way, that is the system that we're building nowadays. Oh, you have emotions, you get a pass. No, what we do is we take those emotions, we put them into proper check. These people looked at a man who was guilty and wanted him a part of their society, looked at a man who was innocent and asked for him to be put away. Real justice, right? Real justice is a static law. You always know what those laws are. You always have access to those laws, and you can stay within the confines of them. Right? As we look, and I wish I could enumerate all the Jewish laws that were broken here and all the Roman laws that were broken here. Just assure you, as you study through, you will find a good number of them. They broke the laws. Why? Because of public opinion. We serve a God of finite laws. Rules, things you can know. They are not decided based on my emotions. They are not decided based on my feelings or opinions. They are, always have been, and always will be. They will not go away as long as there's a world for us to sit on. Instead of saying justice, What are we getting from these people? Number one, I can say whatever I want about you. Wasn't it just a few months back ago everyone was Hitler? We were all Hitler. If you were Democrat, you were so fascist, you were Hitler. And if you're a Republican, you're racist and you're Hitler. And everyone was Hitler except for poor Hitler, who nobody really knows anything about nowadays because they stopped teaching about him and the philosophies that he put into his government. And the things that he pushed for and the things that he said and did, they don't give those speeches. I tell you what, I could sit there with a speech from Adolf Hitler and a rant from a local professor, and most people wouldn't be able to tell them apart. You ever read the speeches? He was a good talker. He was very democratic by our definitions of today. As a matter of fact, America, except for the Jew thing, might have elected him. You understand? And that's how that happens. See, what we want is we want to be able to say what we want. We want to be able to be verbally violent when it so fits us, and social justice is the perfect vehicle for that. I can say what I want about you because you do not agree with public opinion, because you hurt my feelings. When in all actuality, what we're doing is we're lying. We're expressing rage in a matter that we do not understand. Not only can I say whatever I want, I can do whatever I want to you. And that is very much how they treated Jesus here. We do not like what you have to say. We do not like how it threatens our position. So we feel perfectly fine killing you. And not just killing you, but killing you in a painful and public way, in the most shameful way we know how to exercise. Now look at society today and tell me how far off we are from that. We never left it. There's always been this kind of brutality in society for as long as there have been people. The first murder didn't take very long, did it? See, I don't think it's very fair. You see, you took Abel's sacrifice, but you didn't take mine, and that makes me feel oppressed, and that makes me feel not happy. Therefore, I'm perfectly, perfectly well justified in hitting you in the head with this farming implement. It's always been there. It's never left. What we've done is we've left the law to feed in and justify the desires of our sinful nature. Tell me who setting fire to a building helps. What point are we making? Right? There was a man, he came forward, he gave a testimony. He was a black man, gave this testimony of this business that he built, how he put all that he had, every dime he owned was in it, just to have people smash out the windows and set fire to the inside. Why? For equality. How is that fair? It is not what it says it's for. Right? As they sat there and they said, no, put him down. There was no real blasphemy in Jesus. There was no real breaking of the laws in Jesus. They didn't like him. So we're taking the court of public opinion and we're casting a death sentence on him. Why? Because we want. And I found a reason to make that okay. Not only that, but I can take whatever I want from you. I can say what I want. I can do what I want to you. And I can take whatever I want. This is not rational thinking. No jury, no trial, and precious little evidence. Yet we still develop an opinion over what we think should happen. Most of this mindless mob had no idea who Jesus was. And if they did, it was no doubt it wasn't a good one at any one point. But they were turned by those with the forked tongue. We see these chiefs and these elders. And they're going through and they're saying, hey, no, listen, he was a blasphemer. And hey, no, now look what he did. Now, we don't really like him. Now, do you really want our government to fall? Do you really want people to not be treated well? Look, he's a Jew. Are you a Jew? No, you're not. So you don't want to have anything to do with this. And they're frothing up this anger. And they're building up this frustration. Now, here's the good thing, though. So that's the social justice part. You know what happened next? Biblical justice. Biblical justice. What's biblical justice? Well, biblical justice number one is static law. We have the law, right? We have the Old Testament. We have the commands from God. We would sit there, we're not equate them as law, but we have our rules, right? We have them right there in the New Testament, the way a Christian ought to behave. And many of the letters, so that you know how you ought to behave in church. We know exactly what we're supposed to do. We have the law as our schoolmaster to tell us how we are sinners. We have our new commendation from the Lord as to how we're supposed to be serving, right? It is static. I can sit there through Scripture and say, these things are sin, right? A new neighbor comes in, and I look over, and all I really care about is the color of his skin. That's sin. That's sin. I hope nobody's angry at that idea. You don't decide whether or not you're going to be a Christian based on whether you like the way they look, right? Where are they from? Who are you? I talked to a young man one time. We hired him. He was a Muslim young man. And he came in and he sat at my desk. And something on my desk made him really nervous. He goes, hey, I just want to let you know I'm a practicing Muslim. I hope that's not a problem. Terrified. I said, don't worry about it. I go, every now and then I'm going to talk about my religion. I go, but it's not going to stop you from getting hired. You know what gave me the opportunity to do? I gave him the gospel. At the particular time, there was a young man from our church who was there, and the young man from the church gave him the gospel. And we had that opportunity, and I didn't sit there and hate him because of the color of his skin, and I didn't hate him from where he came from, but I took all full liberty that God gave me to do what's right by him. You understand? You following me on this? I listened to none of his doctrine. I took in none of his. I did not tell him any part that he was right. But at the same time, I did not sit there and pull out my sword. And I didn't pull out a gun. And I didn't sit there and threaten the young man. Why? Because he needed the gospel. And at no particular point was I ever commanded to believe myself better than anybody else on the planet. Instead, what is right is that I show the love of God and do what? Fight against sin. As true religion based off of the book of James, right? That I care for others and I stay spotless. Now, if I'm going to have that pure religion, I must practice it out. So there is a static law. These things are sin. These things you should do, and not to do them is sin. And this is the mindset you ought to have as a child of God. It is static. It is easy. We can follow it. It is always right. It is always fair. It is always good. Now, what's the second part of that justice? You failed. You failed. We've all failed. You were born a sinner. You sin because you like to sin. And because of it, you deserve what? An eternity in hell. Everyone ever born was born deserving hell. Not a one of us was cut from a better cloth than the other. None of us were really given a heads or tails over. Yes, there have been times in our society where it's better to be born one color or another. But all the same, we are born the same in God's eyes. You're born a sinner because you are a sinner. You deserve an eternity in hell, and that's the end of it. Good cop, bad cop, stand-up citizen, gangbanger, politician, preacher. God is not a respecter of persons. Heaven isn't for the socially acceptable and the politically correct. There is no system set up that tilts to one color or grouping or other when it comes down to the throne of God. You are a sinner. Now, here again, where biblical justice, just the same as social justice, isn't real justice either. Because what's real justice? You are a sinner, you go to hell, the end. Have a good day, every head bowed, every eye is closed. But that's not justice, is it? That's not what we got. What we got was uncommon grace. See, what I like about this passage of Scripture is not only because does it illuminate our inability to decide right or wrong, and not only does it illuminate the deficiencies of public opinion, but it reveals to us that biblical justice isn't real justice either. Real justice puts the good cop, the bad cop, the good citizen, the criminal, both in hell. But Jesus went to that cross. They broke several of their own laws to do it, but he decided to go. This trial was so corrupt and backwards according to their own books. It's almost a farce. His sentence revealed the depths of our depravity to create an event that would both declare to us a brokenness in our sense of justice and in doing so free us from true justice. That's pretty, isn't it? That in the failings of our own social justice, not only did he reveal our deserving of justice, but he liberated us from real justice. Whew, that's good. That's how the Lord does stuff, by the way. It's always kind of complicated like this until you stand back and you go, there it is. There it is. Christ reveals the problems with our conclusions. He also frees us from the penalties of our sin. And because of which, I will trust his sense and judgment. I will trust his laws. I will trust his commands. Why? Because they are far superior to us. They are far superior to our understanding of things. So I will trust in him. And in the same way, I will show the compassion and love that he shows. If anything, what I'm trying to prove here is that our sense of judgment is not the same, and it is not on the same level. And we cannot adopt a view of social justice. What if we were to flip the coin around and we were to sit there and instead of us picking on people following the law, what if we could do the same? Let's take Alec Baldwin again. Let's try to pull him back up. Can I sit here as somebody who is angry at his Second Amendment stance? Can I sit here as somebody who sat there and said, you shouldn't make fun of the president that way, the way that you did? Can I sit there and say, you deserve every inch of this? Well, hold on. Go with me to Jeremiah 7, verse 8. Jeremiah 7, verse 8. Behold, ye trust in lying words that cannot profit. Will ye steal, murder, and commit adultery, and swear falsely, and burn incense unto Baal, and walk after other gods whom ye know not, and come and stand before me in this house, which is called by my name, and say, we are delivered to do all these abominations? Is this house, which is called by my name, become a den of robbers in your eyes? Folks, what we must do is we must abide by God's rendition of justice. Was a law broken? Then let justice be done. Does somebody need the gospel? Then let the gospel be told. Is there a problem in how something works? Then let us address that problem. But what we cannot do is throw our lives, throw the future of our country and society into the public realm of opinion. It will never pan out. It never will. The very same people who are happy with the way that it's working today would be astonished at the view of public opinion 200-300 years ago. Our opinions, our way of thinking should not be shaped by what people are thinking today. When I preach against the thoughts and the opinions of the world, what do you think we're talking about? This perverted sense of justice. What is right, what is wrong belongs to God. Our response to right and wrong belongs to God. Therefore, we should fix a lot of the problems. See, my problem is not expressing opinion. As a matter of fact, it is very much my job to express the opinions of right and wrong. The problem comes when right and wrong is disassociated from God and put in the hands of fallible humans. Right now, we would sit there and we would say, well, that it'll never spin out of hand. Okay, well, what happens later on down the road, like what's happening in the Netherlands and New Zealand and kind of more European-type setting, where they're debating at what age it's okay for us to kill people because they're a drain on our healthcare system. One of the things that was brought forward in our ethics class, and I'll be done here shortly, I promise, was this. If Bill comes in, and not you, Bill, but Bill. Bill comes in and he's got 5 great working organs, but he's got brain trauma. And we could fix him, send him on his way, and he'll live a perfectly good and normal life. But we've got five patients that badly need healthy organs that builds the perfect blood type for. The discussion that we were led on is it right or wrong for us to cut Bill apart to save five people? Or is it perfectly okay for us to let him go and roll the dice as to whether or not these people live or die? Now imagine, I'm in high school having this conversation. This is a real conversation that governors and lawmakers are making in other countries. And they have to have this discussion because we pay for their insurance. So what do? We roll the dice, we toss it out to public opinion. And I'll tell you what, there's 70 people that want these five people to live. And poor Bill, he's only got 20. You understand? Under no circumstances does man decide what's right or wrong. Under no circumstance do we let our passion decide the punishment for committing sins against right and wrong. We all rely on God. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, Lord, I just